You know, Mary is kind of one of the central figures of the Christmas story. I came from, part of my background was from a big church that put on the big programs and the big events and so forth. That was part of my past. And one of the things that we did back in, and some of you have heard part of the story anyway through the years, but one of the things that we did as part of our Christmas season was we had what we called a living nativity. Okay, and it was we took our huge parking lot, and it up on Main Street, the Methodist church that's up there that has the little places where you can drive by and look at those. Imagine something 10 times that size with live action in each one. And music and stories being told and so forth. It involved literally hundreds of people who participated in it to pull it off. Well, one of my favorite moments in all of the Living Nativity drive-through thing that we did was when the donkey got away with Mary on the back and ran down Main Street in Huntington Beach. It didn't deter us at all. We came back the next year even stronger. But it scarred me, you know, for life, that those kinds of events really scare me. And so some years ago when we started doing Christmas Eve services, we would talk about, oh, what's something really cool we could do, you know, to kind of show that we can, you know, we can do what everybody else does. And we'll, you know, and so one of the discussion points was how we could strap me in, you know, to a zip line, you know, in angel wings, and I could, you know, kind of come down the front, you know, and I kind of nixed that one. And but the thing that always, you know, that you always default to when you go to the Christmas stuff is you got to have live animals. You know, that's kind of the symbol of you've arrived in a great event status. And we had one episode here with a live animal. Now, it wasn't Christmas Eve. It was good we got it out of the way early. It was really just an announcement for Advent Conspiracy one Sunday morning, and we brought a live goat in here. That day has gone down in North Point infamy because the goat pooped right in front and scarred little children for life. Made the Christmas season something that we were afraid of, and so we've never really done anything like that since. But we do love to tell the story again and love to remember the characters in the story. You know, when I read my Bible, I think it's the same one that you read. There was never really supposed to be a Christian religion. That was not part of the original plan, as far as I can tell, reading my Bible. They were just simply followers of Jesus. You leave a bunch of people together, no matter how religious they are. They'll sit around and politicize just about anything. And that's what happened to the church in the early days. It got in bed with Rome, and you know, we've been fighting it ever since. But really, people of humility and faith, the disciples were neither celebrities nor politicians. They were not rich. They were not powerful. They had little or no cultural influence at all. And what little cultural influence some of them had was bad. It was just bad. They had no social status. early on, this movement, this cause, this thing that happened right after Jesus was born, it was never supposed to be about buildings or worship events or who could draw the biggest crowd or who could be the most spiritual. That just wasn't what it was about. These were simply men and women who were willing to follow Jesus. Men and women who are willing to take Jesus at His word and live it out. They were willing to serve. They were willing to trust. They were willing to acknowledge that God was their creator, that He was in control, not just of their lives, but of all creation. They were people who simply believed that God would be here with us. And He had this most magnificent way of proving that that was true, because Emmanuel, God with us, was born. He came to be with us here, now, for real. And it started that way from the very beginning. Here's a little part of the story that leads up to the birth of Jesus. I'm just going to tell you a little bit of the story first. It'll sound a whole lot like I'm reading scripture, but it's really not. It was in the sixth month. God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin who was pledged to be married to a man named Joseph. We've told the story so many times around here, it probably doesn't bear repeating that when it is when they are spoken of as a man and a woman, it's probably more than likely they weren't nothing more than teenagers, Mary and Joseph. It says the virgin's name was Mary. The angel said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you." And it says that Mary, when she got this word, she was greatly troubled. You know what? I could think of a whole lot of reasons why she was greatly troubled. Could have been. But the angel said to her something. This is in Luke 1:31. The angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will be with child and give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus." After he said this, the angel kind of continued on and said, "He will be great and he will be called the Son of the Most High, and his kingdom will never end." So Mary turns to the angel and goes, I mean, I'm not even going to say it in modern vernacular, but it's like, "What? What is going to happen? Can you run that by me again? Because this sure doesn't sound logical to me. This is starting to sound like crazy talk. How can this happen? I am still a virgin. I at least know a little bit of the story of how babies are made. And that's not happening here. How is it going to come to pass?" The angel answered, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you. The power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God." And then we read these amazing words as part of the story at the very beginning. For nothing is impossible with God. If you take nothing else out of here today, take that one with you. For wherever you are, whatever spot you are in your life, nothing is impossible for God. Imagine for just a moment that you were Mary. Just imagine. Young, really young, secretly pregnant, come on. Told by an angel, really, an angel, that you are carrying God's baby. I can think of a lot of words that go along with that story. Crazy is one of them. In that time, in that part of the world, the penalty for sex outside of marriage was often death. Just death for the woman. Or if things happen to spin particularly well for you as a pregnant, unwed teenage girl, what you were looking at more than likely, more than anything else, was divorce and abandonment, at a minimum, by your young husband. I mean, really, who would want to keep you around? You would face public disgrace, humiliation for you, for your family, completely ostracized from your community. Oh, we can sit here today and go, oh, that would never happen in our culture. We're way too civilized for that. No. I pretty much think it could happen here too. In some ways, people are just people. So after the shock wore off of hearing this story and knowing what her new reality was, oh my goodness, the belly starts to show. You know, you can hide it for a while. You can't hide it forever. As the belly starts to show, feelings being swallowed by self-pity. I can't imagine how many times she must have cried, why me? Why me? You know, we can paint this story and we can spin it in any way as, but come on, Mary. You're going to be God's baby's mama. There, I said it that way. kind of gives a whole new look at baby mama, doesn't it? You know, come on. This is like, who else gets that one? I don't think there was partying in the street. I don't think there was any of that. I think it was raw and it was ugly and it was scary because that's where she lived. That's the world she lived in. So, like we all do, she thought she knew what was best, so she argues with God. We know how to do that. But that didn't go away. That went away quickly, I would imagine. She could have focused on her discontent. She could have focused on her fear. She could have let her anxiety and frustrations boil over to create problems for her, for Joseph. She could have turned into a complainer. She could have let her intellect or her logic take over. She could have been consumed by doubt. This could never happen. This couldn't happen to me. She could have simply been consumed by her fear and ran. But inside, she cried these most deep and passionate words of faith. And they are the words that I want to leave you with this Christmas Eve morning. And I want you to pass them by. This is what she says. I am the Lord's servant. May it be to me as you have said. Just let those words sink in this morning. I am the Lord's servant. May it be to me as you have said. Could those be your words today? Maybe? Like young Mary, this young teacher of ours. Our faith is neither blind nor ignorant. Our faith recognizes all of the craziness and unpredictability of a sovereign God who's in control. Have you ever felt that way? Have you ever looked up at what seems to be happening around you and you know that God is supposed to be in control and you want to say to God, look, this is ridiculous what's going on right now. But like Mary, our faith is not to be blind nor ignorant. And can you say today, when you look at your circumstances, may it be to me as you have said? What a statement of faith. Like this beginner servant, this young girl, our faith, the faith we profess, is to be neither self-centered nor self-serving. Faith is not about us. It is not my faith, as if it was something that we created or that even we sustain. As if I can shape and mold and define my own faith in a way that is comfortable for me. You have no idea how many people I talk to these days who will say something to the effect of, well, I understand that's how faith works for you, but for me it works this way. I am telling you that as followers of the Most High, we don't have the right or the privilege to define faith so that it works for us. We follow a historic faith that has been passed down through the ages. I don't choose the faith that I want to have. How about you? Can you today sit here and go, may it be to me as you have said? Or like this pregnant, unwed teenager. Our faith is designed to see beyond circumstances. Our faith is designed to look beyond what we are seeing right here in front of us and to see as best we can the biggest of pictures, the one that only God can see perfectly, but that we are trailing right behind Him, saying, God, let me see what you see. Let me experience what you experience. Let me hold on to the future the way that you hold on to the future. I am overwhelmed by what I can see. Give me vision to see what you see, so that we can say with all confidence, may it be to me as you have said. This humble little child follower, like Mary, our faith resonates above logic and intellect. Not in spite of logic and intellect, it just resides above it. And that faith defines who we are. It gives substance and meaning to our thoughts. It helps us face fear. It helps us deal with places where there are no reasons logically, and all there are excuses. Faith resides above and beyond that. Faith is not otherworldly. Faith in who Jesus is, faith in this baby, faith in the story that we see played out in our holiday time once a year, is the story that is played out every day in our lives. And that is the one that says Jesus came to give life to all who by faith would follow Him. And when we look at the world that's around us, whether it's right next to us or one that is across the other side of the earth, everything that we face can be overtaken by a simple statement that says, "May it be to me as you have said," as the promise of God to you and to me, as the promise of the baby in the manger. It is the promise of the Christ child who ended up on the cross purchasing the lives that we have. He is worthy of our honor and our praise.